Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
In some of my songs, I have casually mentioned the fact that I like to drink beer. This little song is more to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow. I like beer. It helps me unwind and sometimes it makes me feel mellow.
Welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Today is Tuesday, January 31st, 2012. Beer Sessions Radio is sponsored by GreatBrewers.com. GreatBrewers.com is your online connection to the world of craft beer. They bring together the American beer community. We like things like the Beer Cloud and the Great Brewers Test to challenge your beer IQ. So check out GreatBrewers.com to learn more about beer. And we're also supported by the people at the Good Beer Seal, an association of 34 New York City beer bars that serve, promote, and support good beer. Check out goodbeerseal.com. All right, today it's Jack Inslee's birthday. He's the producer for the whole Heritage Radio Network. Give a shout out to Jack. I know he's listening. He's always listening. And all right. Happy birthday, Jack Inslee. Okay. Well, I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43. We've had some incidences out there. Our Tony Forder from Ale Street News is stuck on the Jersey Turnpike. And Sam Barbieri from Waterfront Alehouse is stuck with the health department in Brooklyn at his Waterfront Alehouse. So it's just me and a special guest tonight, Jason Bullen from 49th State Brewing.
How's it going, Jimmy?
Jason, what is the 49th State?
The 49th State is a small brew pub located right outside of Denali National Park up in Healy, Alaska. We just opened about 2 years ago, and we started brewing back in May. And we're actually a seasonal brewery because of the harsh climate up there and the amount of tourists that we have coming through during the season. So we're open from about May till about the end of October. I started out as the first brewer there in May after I finished school at Siebel Institute. And it was a great season for me. You know, I came back. I'm actually from New York. Came back for the winter. You know, not many people winter in New York, but here I am sitting. You know, it's 55 degrees here, so I guess I can't really complain today. But back in New York, just doing some research, working on some recipes for the upcoming season, and I'm planning on heading back up there around the end of March.
So that's awesome. So Alaska is the 49th state. And you're one of how many breweries in Alaska?
There's about 22 breweries in Alaska, ranging from some big regional breweries, like most people know, Alaskan Brewery located in Juneau, to us, which we're probably the smallest. Last year, we were the smallest producing brewery. We produced about 30 barrels through the season on our little 10-gallon system.
Wow, that's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
So you're truly a seasonal brewery.
Yes, currently we are. Eventually, the plan is to be open year-round. But because of the way that the kind of the tourist season works up there, basically most of the people that come through there come through through the cruise lines. It's part of their package, and the cruise ships each have a big hotel right up in Denali Park. So it's kind of part of that tour. They come up, they see the park, which is absolutely phenomenal, and then they head home. But you know, the season only lasts from May to September, really. So once that's done, it's really hard for us to kind of sustain business throughout the winter. Healy, where the brewery is located, actually has a coal mine, this huge coal mine, and it's pretty much the only reason why Healy exists. But so there's a lot of great locals that kind of hang around there, but for us, it's really hard for us to kind of justify staying open all through the winter and staying open. But again, you know, eventually, you know, looking towards production-wise, and once we're actually putting in a new system, a new five-barrel system towards the end of April. So once that goes in, hopefully through the winter, maybe next year or the following year, we'll be getting on production, you know, a little bottling, canning, something along that lines to be able to maintain and stay open year-round. Because as a brewery, it's hard for a business model to, you know, only be open 8 months out of the year, even though that's kind of the norm up there.
Wow, that's pretty awesome. So it's the 49th State Brewing. What's the official name of the brewery?
It's called 49th State Brewing Company. Again, it's in Healy, Alaska. It's actually part of a larger group of restaurants. There's also the Denali Park Salmon Bake and Prospector's Pizza and Pizzeria and Ale House. And the brewery is the third incarnation of those. The owners, they started out with the Salmon Bake, which has been around there for a long time. They bought into it about 7 or 8 years ago and really kind of look to kind of push more beer forward. And a good friend of mine and one of the owners, David McCarthy, who I met at Siebel Institute in Chicago, and that's how I ended up, I made my way up to Alaska. He's really, you know, he's really the heart and soul of that whole, their whole beer thing. And it's really about like producing local, being locally owned. Those guys all live up there. You know, they're a big part of the community up there, even though it's really small. And his thing is producing and bringing in, you know, world-class beers from throughout the world and producing them ourselves. So the pizzeria is a great concept. It's again, all the businesses up there are seasonal, but the pizzeria itself, we have 49 beers on tap, about 30 of which are represented by local Alaskan beers from, you know, Alaskan. King Street's going to be a new one that just opened up there. We're going to get some stuff. Those guys are doing some really good stuff. Silver Gulch, all these local breweries that are up in Alaska, we try to bring in as much as possible into the pizzeria to kind of give people that, you know, more of that experience. I mean, anybody that gets on an Alaskan Airlines flight gets an Alaskan Amber handed to them pretty much. So people are kind of aware of that, those Alaskan beers, but it's more that experience of experiencing all these beers that you really can't get, you know, anywhere outside of Alaska, which is really the thing that we try to push. And it works well for us, you know, because people really like to see that. And again, all the beer community is really pushing more and more, you know, more and more breweries open up. It's more and more local, you know, where the freshest beer, the freshest ingredients, although up there we don't grow too much stuff, so that's a little different story for us. But still, I mean, fresh beer is where it's at right now, and that's what we try to give to all the customers in all three locations.
So where you guys are, do you get things by boat or air or highway? How do you get your ingredients shipped to you and food products and everything?
Mostly everything gets trucked up from Washington area. We have a couple different freight forwarders. One of the freight forwarders in the Washington area. So all of our grain will go through Washington, get it up there. It's a big extra cost for us. I mean, it really costs, there's a big add-on to get us what we need because of where we are, the location. I mean, we really can't, we have no ability, we don't really have the ability to grow any of our own hops or grain or anything to really help sustain that. But it's just part of doing business up in Alaska.
Wow. Well, I'd like to first start with you. I mean, you're a pretty interesting guy, and a few times on the show we've talked about beer education, and there's not that many, you know, brewing programs in the country. Tell us what your background was and how you ended up going to beer school.
Well, I started out home brewing about, I think it was about 6 years ago. I was living out in California. Right when I moved out there with my girlfriend, now my fiance, we had...
What's your name?
Michelle.
Michelle.
And we had moved out there. She had moved out there through work, and we were only been dating for about 6 months, decided to move out to California together, start a new life, blah, blah, blah. And I had to find some place to work, so I started working in this little brew pub that was right around the corner from where we found a place, Tide House Brewery and Cafe, just as a, you know, a waiter, host, whatever I could kind of get in until I kind of found something for myself. And I really kind of fell in love with the whole brew pub, serving beer, you know, seeing the tanks, seeing everything made right there. I really kind of fell in love with the whole thing, and that's where I kind of began. So I started homebrewing while I was out in California, you know, doing just a little stovetop extract stuff here and there. And 3 years later, when we moved back to New York, I kind of, you know, I went talking with my buddies, and we kind of got together and decided we want to continue the brewing thing. And I eventually, you know, decided to build my own all-grain system, working on that, kind of put it together, really enjoyed doing it. And about a year after that, I really decided that beer is where I wanted to, you know, continue being working professionally. Now I wanted to move on to this next step. I wanted to do something now that I love, so beer was going to be it. So I started interning at a production brewery out in Jersey, Fairfield, Cricket Hill Brewery. It's a little production brewery out there, and they've been around for a couple of years, and guys out there are really great. I spent a couple months there, and after that, I kind of just decided, you know what, if I want to do this professionally, school to me was the best option. You know, some guys will tell you, well, you know, you can go work in a brewery for free for 3 years and then, you know, work your way up that way, and it works for a lot of guys that way. But for me, in my situation, it just was better for me to, you know, kind of suck it up, go to school, pay the money, and go through that, go that route. And it really worked out for me.
So what's the program at Siebel?
The program that I attended at Siebel offers a lot of different things. Siebel Institute, it's located in Chicago. It is the oldest brewing institution in the nation. I think they're celebrating like their 140th year this year, so they've been around for a while. And like you said, there's not too many places in the country. There's about three total programs with Siebel that really offer some kind of brewing education. And it's the program that I went through is the International Diploma Program. So what it is, it's spent about 7 weeks in Chicago and then another 5 weeks in Munich and traveling through Germany. And it's a it covers the huge spectrum of, you know, just brewing from raw ingredients to production to fermentation to, you know, from finished product. And it really, it's a great overview for the industry. I mean, there's not, to me, a lot of the stuff that I learned was stuff that I had already known, you know, self-educating and kind of brewing for a couple of years. But still, to me, the experience going to Germany was a great thing because it kind of tied everything together. Being there for 5 weeks, Dumans Academy partners up with Siebel, and Dumans is located right outside of Munich. So I spent 3 weeks there in school, you know, going through lab stuff, brewing, all this other stuff. And then the last 2 weeks was one of the best things. You actually travel around Germany, and we were in through Germany and Austria for 2 weeks, just visiting different breweries, different, you know, like Weiermann, like all these production places, all the places that make all the equipment. And it really kind of ties the whole thing together. So it was a great experience to me. And the best thing was the contacts that I made while I was in school. I mean, there's a lot of guys that I met that really I now consider close friends, and it really, it helps being, you know, new in the industry, still having other people to kind of bounce things off of. And I have a good buddy, Sean, who's brewing out in Oregon right now at the Commons Brewery. They just started up, fired up their 7-barrel system a couple weeks ago. And another buddy, Sharif, who lives here in New York, who's working on something with a couple guys here, and to be able to work with those guys and bounce things off. And yeah, we're all kind of new to the industry, so it helps us to kind of work our way in together. And
well, that's awesome. So Siebel, it's called, what is it called? Siebel Institute?
Siebel Institute of Technology. It's located in Chicago. Again, the oldest brewing institution in the United States. Really great program there. And it's to me, it was definitely worthwhile.
That's great. So we're going to take a short break here on Beer Sessions Radio. We'll be back with Jason. Talk more about learning how to be a brewer and brewing in Alaska on Beer Sessions Radio.
In a pretty cabinet, she says, just like Marie Antoinette, a building, a remedy for Khrushchev and Kennedy. At any time, an imitation you can't decline. Caviar and cigarettes, well-versed in etiquette, extraordinarily nice. She's a killer queen, gunpowder, jetty, dynamite with a laser beam, guaranteed to blow your mind. An appetite. Wanna try? To avoid complications, she never kept the same address. In conversation, she spoke just like a baroness. Middleman from China, but down to geisha minor. Then again, accidentally, in that way. Forgot she couldn't care less, fastidious and precise. She's a killer queen, gunpowder gelatine, dynamite with a laser beam, guaranteed to blow your mind.
All right, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43. We're here at Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn. We've got some cool guests tonight. We've been talking to Jason Bullen, the brewer from 49th State Brewing in Alaska, a cool brew pub. And just walked in, Andrea Stanley from Valley Malting. They're really great, small, real malt place in Western Massachusetts. Hi, Andrea, how are you?
Good, Jimmy, how are you?
Good. Well, welcome back. We're talking to Jason. And we're learning he went to school at Siebel Institute in Chicago, and he's at the 49th State Brewing, a brew pub in Denali Park, Alaska. We're drinking one of your beers, Jason. Tell us about this, because it's really good.
This is a New Zealand pale ale. It's actually it's brewed with American malts, but all the hops are New Zealand. It's Pacific Gem, Motuka, and Nelson Savin. About 6%, nice and easy drinking. It's something I've been working on because of we've had some issues trying to get the hops that we used last year in a more of a bulk quantity. And because we hadn't put together any hop contracts last year, unknowingly that, you know, we were going to need them. Now this year we're kind of stuck for, you know, kind of stuck right now. So it's my just kind of working with some different hops to see what I can get out of them, and, you know, what's using what's available, and just kind of improvising with them. So
All right. We've got Tony Forder. Tony, are you on the air?
Hey, Jimmy.
Tony Forder, the editor of Ale Street News, a really great beer magazine. Tony, do you know about hop contracts? We're sitting here with Jason.
I guess they were running into some problems a few years ago when there was a hop shortage. And the people that had contracts were okay, and the people that didn't, you know, were looking for hops.
Yeah. Well, Jason, tell us a little more about this. I never heard of hop contracts before.
Well, again, basically what it is, how the hop suppliers work is you buy your hops a year in advance or 2 or 3 years in advance. So you sign up for this contract, and you say, I'm going to purchase X amount of pounds of this variety next year, and throughout the year you get to purchase them. And basically, if you don't have them, and there's certain varieties that are really scarce and hard to find, such as like right now, Simcoe, Amarillo, Centennial, a lot of these hops are really hard to find unless you have the contracts. And unfortunately, because last year when we started up, we really didn't put any in place, now we're kind of thrown for a loop. So obviously, we've now put them in place for this year, put them in place for next year. So now, I'm ordering hops for next season, you know, not this coming April. Actually, the following April, to be able to get what I want.
So that's like one of the many issues you face.
One of the many issues, but that's an issue that a lot of brewers face, and there's a lot of scarcity in some of these hops that have really become popular, and of course the boom of all these new breweries opening up. It's really there's so many people looking to get a very limited amount of stuff. So.
Oh, cool. Hey, let's talk to Tony a little bit. Tony, the new issue of Ale Street News just came out, and you have a really great article that you're about Belgian beer. What's the title? It's Is Belgium Over the Hill?
Yeah, that's what we kind of we have on our cover, Is Belgium Over the Hill, and it kind of came from really the impetus from one of our writers, Stephen Beaumont, February is usually our Belgium theme because we're gearing up for our Belgian trip at the end of the month here. So he kind of took on the task of Is Belgium Redundant? He had been replying to a piece written by a Dutch brewer. And I think the conclusion we came to was that there's still plenty of good stuff going on in Belgium, but, you know, at one time, they were kind of really out there on their own doing, you know, these kind of beers. Like a quote from my editorial, it is true that one time Belgium stood on its own, unique among beer cultures, discovered by the late Michael Jackson, who shone a light on its jewels for the world to see. I think it's more the fact that brewers around the world, particularly in the U.S., have kind of caught up to Belgium in brewing these eclectic styles of beer.
Wow. Well, we have a good panel here. We've got Jason and we have Andrew from Valley Malt. What do you guys think? I mean, of what Tony just said. You think is Belgium, you know, the place that you would aspire to? You think there's the best beers being made in Belgium? What do you think of the reputation of Belgian beer, Andrea?
Well, I love Belgian beers. Saison DuPont is one of my favorites, and it's a farmhouse ale, which I think is a style that ties in really nicely to what we're doing with Valley Malt, and kind of is a beer that focuses on what was available from the farms that year, and it's a style I think that really can help to define a terroir of an area, and I think Belgium has done a great job using local ingredients in their beers, and for that I think it'll forever be new because every growing season is new and will bring about new nuances to their styles.
So at your malt house, are you making certain styles of malt? Like for certain styles of beer?
Yep.
Like what are the most popular styles that you're making?
Well, what we malt the most of is an American pale, but we will malt from specific fields. So we make an American pale that comes from one farm in New York, another farm in Vermont, another farm in Maine, our local land that we have in Massachusetts. We also malt wheat, hard red, soft white. So there's that. There's the wheats. We even have started to malt heirloom wheats, Red Fife, Warthog, Emmer, which is a ancient wheat, and Spelt. And then rye, we malt rye. Then once it's been malted, we can also make specialty malts out of it. So we could roast that rye and make a chocolate rye. We could roast the wheat and make a chocolate wheat. So we've been making a lot of malts in the past years.
Are there specific malt characteristics of Belgian beer? And Tony, you can jump in, and Jason.
Yeah, that's a lot of malts you're making there. Where are you located?
We're in Hadley, Massachusetts.
Oh, okay.
Western Mass.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, tell us more about it, because you guys are really unique.
Well, we right now malt roughly 3,000 pounds of grain each week, and we only source our ingredients from farmers that we have relationships with that come from New England and New York. And as far as I know, we're still the only malt house east of the Mississippi, although I think there's some guys down in, well, there are some guys down in Asheville, North Carolina that just started up a micro malt house. But we actually just got our a new loan last week, and we're upping our capacity to 4 tons a week.
Wow, that's
starting
great.
In March, so that's pretty huge for us. And since we've been in business now for a year and a half, the demand has just been awesome. The response from breweries and people who drink beer has been awesome. And also the response from farmers from New York and Maine and Vermont who really want somewhere to send the
grains. Are you coming to our event tonight?
I am.
We're doing it's called Farm Plus Beer Expo, and it started as there's a farmer upstate New York, John Gorzinski. It's a fundraiser for him. But then we thought, why don't we feature some breweries that are making beers from local ingredients?
Now, what, his farm got hit with the hurricane?
Yeah, the hurricane. There was a hurricane in the Hudson Valley.
Yeah.
In late August.
Yep. It was a tough year.
And he's a great guy. He's leader of the green market and all that stuff. But okay. The event is interesting because, yeah, like, not every beer there tonight have been made with local ingredients, but all of those breweries have at least tried to make some beers with local ingredients. I know that Kelso, he may have used your malt in his beer tonight.
We made a cherry wood smoked triticale for the beer that he'll be highlighting tonight.
Yeah.
And that was just a custom order.
There's a lot going on here on the show, but I do want to, I'm trying to fit Tony in. You guys, listeners, help me, because I'm trying to fit Tony in. We're talking about Belgian. And Jason, you can tell me, what malt profile would you use to make a Belgian beer? Or do they use any malt profile?
It depends on the Belgian. I mean, there's a couple different Belgian beers that you talk about.
Yeah, there's a couple. You know, there's a whole smorgasbord. That's the thing about Belgian beers. They're all over the map. And, it's really their artisanal quality that, you know, makes them appealing. Mm-hmm. That's something that's really been adapted to over here in the States, I think.
So malt is one. I mean, a couple weeks ago we had the guys from Bronx Brewery, and for the first time they showed the five different malts that they use just to make their pale ale. So you're just saying that malt is the most important ingredient? Would you say that?
I wouldn't say the most important, but I would say, obviously, I mean, the four main ingredients, of course, malt, hops, yeast, and one that a lot of people forget about is water. I mean, water, to me, is one of the biggest things. I mean, that really is going to help your beer. A lot of people can make decent beer, but to make outstanding beer, I mean, you really have to pay close attention to that water profile, because there's so much in that water, you know, whether the hardness, the calcium levels, you know, if there's chlorine, or you're on municipal water, on your own well water, is there nitrates in the water? There's so many things that go into it that a lot of guys, you know, they think it's over their head, and they just don't worry about it, or they think they're okay without it. But to me, water is the biggest one. But all four of them make a big deal. I mean, malt is one of those things where it's very, traditionally, it's very, you know, territorial. It's where you come from. You know, German beers are made with German malt. Belgian beers are made with Belgian malt. American, English, you know, it's where that, but now, because of, you know, the 21st century, you can get malt from all over the country. I mean, I can get malt in Alaska from anywhere in the world. It's really not an issue, so I can pick out which profiles I like and what I want to use, and I can, you know, go online and click on something and it'll show up. You know, maybe Alaska, I got a little more lead time, but still, you can get anything from anywhere.
Tony, is that the case in Belgium? Are they getting mostly Belgian malts, or are they...
I think with a lot of Belgian beers, you know, they've traditionally brewed to a higher strength, which means more malt. So the beers have tended to be on the maltier side. You know, some of those thick Trappist beers, they put a lot of malt in them, and they, you know, for the high alcohol, I mean, you know, 6-7%, it's the norm, and then, you know, 10%. And that's, you know, it's kind of one of the trends of craft brewing here, as well as has been to up the malt bill and go for a higher strength. And, of course, the American beers, particularly on the West Coast, have always liked to throw a lot of hops into the beer as well. So now, you know, the trick is to balance it with the malt and go that route.
All right.
And if you want to get into it, I actually have the next beer I have is... it's an IPA. It's brewed with all American hops, but it's used in a Belgian ale yeast. So it's kind of a little bit of a play on both of those things. That's the thing. You can, again, that's the one. Being able to get all these different ingredients from all across the world, there's really, it gives brewers a great opportunity to kind of use them and showcase different ones, and it really, it's really a great thing for the craft brewing industry.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Recently, the last couple of years, there's been some brewers in Belgium that have experimented using American hops and making hybrid beers, on both sides of the Atlantic, actually, with a Belgian triple style, and it mixed with a double IPA kind of hop profile. And, it's produced some, interesting collaborative beers.
Hey, Tony, the last time you were on, we didn't get to finish. You had a whole list of your 2012 beer predictions.
Oh, yeah, I do have some predictions for you, Jimmy. I think I mentioned just one last time. Some of these are just continuations of trends. I mentioned more and more women in beer, enjoying craft beer, becoming involved in brewing. I think we're seeing growth in draft beer is becoming more and more popular, and takeout beer, as in growlers. And I see, I see bars offering more of other types of less cumbersome packaging also than the growler. I think we'll see some other types of go containers coming on the market. Some liquor stores now and even drugstore chains are having taps installed, and you can go in and get your draft beer to go. And canned beer, that's also a growing trend. Nano breweries, there's about 800 breweries waiting to open. Most of them are small, the nano variety.
Wow.
There's going to be a Nano Fest on Long Island. There's quite a
few Nano
breweries on Long Island.
In Alaska.
10 gallons.
Yep.
But we're quickly moved. We learned very quickly that, it was cost effective at first to start out with that small brewery. But what I tell everybody that asks me is go as big as you can, because it's really, you just can't keep up with demand. I mean, you get a small system, but you spend more and more time brewing. It's not worth the money. You got to go as big as possible to start up, and that's what I tell a lot of people. A lot of people ask me that question.
What size would you start? Ideal startup size.
Well, it depends. I mean, if you're a brew pub, you probably get away. Like I said, we're doing a 5-barrel system, but we've kind of configured our tanks where we have multiple fermentation vessels, so we can really, because our biggest thing is being able to have a big variety of beers on tap. We want to have 8 to 10 of our 12 taps our beer at all times, so we want to be able to turn that over and be able to have those beer out there. But if you're a production brewery, to me, you got to start out with 15 barrels, because you're selling that beer. You have to get out on the street selling that beer to start up. You really need to be making as much beer as possible. Now, there are guys out there that are doing it on smaller systems, but if you ask them, I'm sure they'll tell you if they had the ability, they would have started as big as possible, because if you're making good beer, it's going to sell. That's just the bottom line. And if you're spending, 70, 80 hours a week brewing beer, it hurts the bottom line, where if you have to be out there, if you're a production brewer, you're spending all this time brewing beer, when are you going to go out there and sell that beer? When are you going to promote that beer? You really, starting out small, guys don't really think of that, and that's, to me, is the biggest thing. You got to go.
Yeah, it does seem like a lot of nano small breweries, home brewers turn professional, and nano breweries have definitely underestimated the demand for their beer, the popularity of it in the local community.
Well, it's good to talk about it, and I'll tell you that. I'm amazed at how many breweries there are, and I actually can't keep up with them. At our pub, Jimmy's Number 43, I try to take on all the new brewers from the region, but then there's so many breweries that I don't get to carry. So that's a good problem, I'll tell you that. Andrew, in Massachusetts, where you are in Hadley, Mass., are there a couple of real small local breweries that you provide malt to?
A lot of the nano breweries that have 10-gallon systems, they come to us for malt because we're kind of at the scale where we can provide them with malt. But we're also seeing the same trend that within 6 months.
Tell us about a couple of the ones that are near you that you provide malt to.
Well, in New Hampshire, in Northampton, New Hampshire, which is right on the seacoast, there's Throwback Brewery. And that's two women, Annette Lee and Nicole Carrier, run that brewery. And they do most of their sales right out of the brewery in really beautiful growlers that they, and then they also have growlettes, which are kind of the half size of a normal growler, and they do most of their business just that way. And they make fantastic beer and use mostly Valley malt. There's Wormtown Brewery in Worcester, Mass., And they started off actually as a 10.
She just smiled when she said Mass, Worcester, Mass.
I know you're not from Worcester, but you're from.
I am from
Haverhill, right?
Haverhill, Massachusetts.
Yeah. And, you know, they started off 10-barrel pub style brewery, and they're already, you know, looking at upping to, gosh, I mean, they've pretty much grown out the space they're in, and I want to say they're going to have at least a 20 or a 30-barrel brewery by next year. Trying to think of some of the other ones. Well, there's Tundra Brewery in New York, and Mark Van Glad will be at the event tonight. He's actually a farmer and a brewer.
He buys malt from you?
He grows the barley, and we contract malt it for him, and then he brews with it.
So he's unique. I mean, there's a new law in New York State. If you are a microbrewery, you can sell at farmers markets. They just have to apply for like a special license. But in New York City, the best farmers market, it's the green market system. There's 60 markets in New York City, and it keeps a lot of farmers in New York alive. They will only allow a farmer who grows 50% of his own grain and hops. That farmer, if he makes his own beer, can sell at the green market. So right now, the only one doing it is Tundra.
Yeah.
So that's pretty neat.
And
the thing about it is, he took a chance. I mean, he started out his first batch. It was okay, like an ale-type beer. But each batch is getting better. And, you know, he was a home brewer, learned to make beer. And I think that's what's going on a lot, mm-hmm. is that you see a lot of people that start, and as they brew, they get better. And I think that's a great opportunity for people.
Yeah. We're also working with Wandering Star. I know Chris Post was on the show a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, we love those guys, Wandering Star. And they'll be tonight, too, at Beer...
Oh, good.
It's Farm Plus Beer Expo.
Okay. And then Mystic Brewery. I don't know if you've heard of Mystic. They're in Chelsea. And...
Chelsea in New York City?
Chelsea, Mass.
Chelsea. I've never heard of them.
Yep. They're doing a lot of Belgian style. They're doing some really interesting Belgian style beers.
So you're mostly working with smaller.
Yeah, we've had a few bigger customers. Peak Organic did a local series this fall, where we malted grain from each state, and they used the same recipe, but they, you know, had a beer, a local Mass, a local Vermont, a local New York, a local Maine. And so we've worked with a few bigger breweries, but for the most part, it's the smaller breweries that are
Tony. Would you consider this a trend? Is this something that you think is going to happen more often, or is Andrea's malt facility like an isolated thing?
Yeah, I think the trend to the terroir. Rogue Brewery out in Oregon has its own farm now where they grow barley, and they have they came out with a beer called Dirtoir, you know, from the dirt. Instead of calling it terroir, they call it Dirtoir. It's a black lager, and it's, you know, with their own barley. I also heard of a guy from Great Britain who had developed a micro malting system that microbrewers could use to malt their own grain. I'm really not sure where that's at in terms of people using it yet. But
well, and Jimmy, I know I just was reading today that New York State actually just passed through the House a bill to try to open up a new license for breweries called a farmhouse brewery, basically. And what it is they're going to allow this license to farm brewers where they're using these locally sourced ingredients. And within, I think, 4 or 5 years, the stipulation is the brewery within 4 or 5 years has to be using 90% of all their raw ingredients locally made in New York, grown in New York State. So it's great to see people like Andrea, you know, are getting in here and making these, you know, the micro malting, and really it's a great thing because, again, it's all about local. It's all about, you know, having the freshest product available, and that really starts with, you know, local grown.
We see it from the beginning to the end too. You know, you see it from the brewing perspective. We see it from the farming to the malting to the brewing perspective. And I have to say, also all about the local. It's the freshness and it's the flavor, but it's also about keeping farms viable. And there are so many farms in New York that are just ready to grow high-quality grain. It used to be that Western New York was the biggest producer of malting barley in our country. That was back in the late 1800s, early
1900s. And it also, upstate has a lot of...
hop-growing area, too.
That's what I was just going to say. They have a lot of history behind the hop-growing back in the day, too. So it's great to see that come forward and really start over again. I mean, it's all, you know, our civilization is always this cyclical, you know, every couple of years everything kind of rotates, and now with the recession and everything, you see a lot of people going back to the roots, you know, local, kind of thinking things out of the box of where, you know, we've been so used to getting, you know, you go to the supermarket, you get all everything you need from all across the world, the country, wherever it is, and same thing with brewing for a long time, but it's great to see, you know, all these local products now being available, and guys like, you know, you guys making that available to brewers, it's a great thing to see.
Yeah, and to
it makes it more real, because for years, the, you know, rallying cry of craft brewing has been drink local, but yet, you know, the malt came from all around the world, really, so, you know, it didn't. I mean, it was locally made, but the ingredients weren't locally sourced, per se. So,
and to your
definitely.
Here's Andrea.
Sorry. To your point, though, when you want to make a British ale, mm-hmm. you're going to want to use British malts. Or if you want to make a German lager,
sure.
you're going to want to get malt from Bamberg. But how nice if you want to make something that is something unique to your area.
Sure.
Well, that's it. And it's great to me to state a style, but again, you know, you make those beers as a style. It's a Belgian style beer. It's not, it's a English style, you know, mild, you know, barley wine, whatever it is. You're not, you know, I'm not from Belgium. I'm not one of these brewers that have been around for hundreds of years. I don't make Belgian beer. I make a Belgian style beer. You know, what I put into that makes that style. I mean, and it has to do not just with the malt and the hops and the, you know, the yeast, everything kind of plays a part of that, but it's all, as a brewer, it's your interpretation of those styles. You're not making a Belgian beer. You can't, unless I'm brewing in Belgium, I'm not making a Belgian beer. So it's all about the style.
That's a great, perfect thing to say. Before we take a break, I want to ask a quick question, because we've got Jason, Andrea, and Tony. It's our beer expert panel today. We're going to ask some questions from the greatbrewers.com Great Beer Test. Okay. One, the oldest beer recipes on record are mentioned in hymns to which deity? Jason, either Egyptian sun god Ra, Ninkasa of Sumeria, Poseidon, or Athena?
Ninkasa.
Ninkasa of Sumeria, correct. All right. So, all right, next one for Tony. SRM, standard reference method, expressed in degrees Lovibund, is used to describe the blank of beer. The higher the SRM, the blank the beer. It's either clarity, bitterness, strength, or darkness, color.
Color.
Excellent. So Lovibund measures color. Very good. And this is for you, because this isn't this. What's the name of your tour to Belgium?
Oh, beg your pardon? When we're leaving?
The annual tour that you take. This is why you're on the air, because you tell us about your tour. Your annual tour to Belgium, what's it called? The name of the tour. Is it Zymergy or Zythos or something?
Well, there's something. It's coincide with the Zythos Festival, which has in fact moved to the end of April now. It used to be the first week in March. So we are taking in a growing festival which features about a dozen very cutting edge breweries in Europe at the Alvin. It's the Alvin Craft Brewers Festival at the Alvin Brewery. So that's one of our highlights on this trip.
Have you had Alvin, Jason?
Sierra Nevada one?
No. It's a Belgian beer. It's Alvin, A-L-V-I-N-N-E.
No, I haven't.
Have you ever had that?
No.
Tony, tell us about the Alvin Fest, because that's the coolest thing I've heard all night. I want to go there.
Yeah, there's breweries such as Distruss, Tunbridge from England, De Molen from Holland, just to name a few, but there's a lot of barrel-aged offerings there. And
But Alvin, that's a brewery, isn't it? Alvina?
Yeah, that's the brewery, and they're hosting it at there. If they have a new brewery, they're hosting it there, and it's the first weekend in March, and we're heading out February 28th.
Okay, last question before we take a break. Andrea, the term Zymergy refers to what? The ability to get all aspects of the brewing process to work in unison, the science of brewing and fermentation, the process through which yeast consumes sugars with a maximum alcohol content, blah, blah, blah. What is Zymergy?
B.
The science of brewing and fermentation. Go to greatbrewers.com, learn more about things, and take the Good Beer Test 100. I got a 72. See if you can beat me. All right, we'll take a short break here on Beer Sessions Radio. We'll be right back. Hey, welcome back. Welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43. We just did some questions from the greatbrewers.com, the beer test. Jason, you're here. Jason, the brewer from 49th State Brewing in Alaska. You took the greatbrewers.com, the 100 question test. What did you get on it?
I got an 89.
89, and this guy went to Siebel Institute. So it's definitely pretty- check out greatbrewers.com, and that's where you can learn more about beer education and tell me your test. I want you guys to send it in at beer_sessions. Twitter us if you take the test and let us know. Goodbye to Tony Forder. He's a great guy. Knows a lot about beer. He just hasn't been able to drive here from New Jersey to Brooklyn, so we've had him on the air a few times. Andrea, you got a Valley Malt. You're really making a difference in a Northeast brewing. So many times you forget the basic ingredients of beer besides water. Include things like malt and hops, but somebody has to process these ingredients. It's an amazing thought process. I mean, that beer actually exists, you know, besides this like natural state of, you know, whatever they used to do. But I mean, I'm stumbling on my words, but you can probably help me out, Jason. Beer is, although it's simple, the process of making beer that I'm drinking right now is very complicated.
Of course.
I mean, without malt facilities and these hop facilities, we wouldn't have the beer the way that we know it.
And back in the day, of course, most breweries malted their own barley. So there wasn't, you know, a Breese or a Weyermann. You know, these breweries were taking the barley, buying it from the farmers, malting it themselves, you know, floor malting it, kilning it, drying it, and doing everything themselves. So back then, there was a really big difference in those beers because they, you know, everyone wasn't using this kind of standardized malt, and it kind of goes back to what these guys are doing. It's like it's locally grown stuff. You know, it's there's a lot of more variation because of that specific maltster. So it really makes a big difference in the product you're giving to the brewers and what the brewers have to work with.
Andrew, when people come to you, do you think that they really want specific malts and they're looking for specific flavors, or are they just trying to find something local so they can have a local beer? That's a dumb question.
I think the first, you know, some people are, brewers are, the brewers that are our customers and that are interested in working with Valley Malts know that we are not at the point, you know, even a year into this, obviously, we can't produce a lot of malt, and we also can't produce something that's going to be your consistent two-row that you'd put in a silo and you would, you know, get 40 ton of it at a time, and it would be mixed so that it would always be the same. So I think they are looking for something different. They're looking for something local, I think, is primary, and then something different. And a lot of times, you know, part of the fun of what we're doing is talking about creative projects. New grains that we could try to malt that nobody's ever tried to malt before, heirloom grains, roasting them to somebody's specifications, that kind of thing.
So maybe, Jason, you're saying is that besides something like Valley Malt, that more and more regions and more breweries actually need to have their own malt houses.
Well, it's a hard thing to do because it's not an easy process. It's very complicated, and especially a lot of the big regional brewers, it's not worth their time to really get into that. It's much easier for them to buy it as is. But, you know, for a smaller brewery, for a lot of these new, like, farmhouse terroir breweries, it really makes a lot of sense to, for them to do it themselves, to go to people like, you know, Valley Malting and be able to get, you know, this locally grown product. And yes, every batch might be a little inconsistent, but you know what? There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, you're using something locally grown from the soil of where your brewery is. And to me, that makes that's a huge thing to be able to say.
That's great, man. I want to say how much I like your beer. We're on our third beer now. Tell us about the second and then this third beer that we're drinking.
The second one was the IPA. It was all American hops with the Belgian yeast, so it gave it a little different character to it. The third one is a beer that is near and dear to my heart. It's something that I've been working on a lot. It's a smoked ale. It's made with some smoked malt and a little Munich malt, not too complicated. While I was in school in Germany, we spent a couple days in Bamberg, which is kind of the home of smoked beer. And it really, being there was kind of like a pilgrimage to me. I had, you know, was really into these smoked beers before, and once going there and be able to sit at the breweries like at Schenkela and Spezial and be able to drink these breweries where most people don't know, but a lot of smoked beer, most back in the day before you know, maltsters were able to consistently dry and not dry over a direct flame, all beers had a smoky flavor to them because it was just the way it was. You dried your malt over a wood fire and it's going to pick up that flavor. So once kind of like, you know, these new innovations came along and maltsters were able to more evenly dry and with indirect heat and everything, everybody kind of stepped away from that. But Bamberg is kind of stuck in that, like, no, you know, we're going to stay here. We're still, you know, drying our malt the same way we were for hundreds of years. And it really, that smoky malt it's a character that comes through, and it's really something that's stands out. And to me is a great style. There's something about it I just love. I can't really explain it.
I like it too. Does by using the smoky malt, does that mean you need to use less hop or any other flavorings?
No, I mean the hops too. The hops, it's not a really highly hop beer. It's probably around 30 IBUs, so it's kind of on the lower end. But it's really the beer that beer to me is meant to showcase that smoky malt. So I, again, a very minimal malt bill. It's more just like showcase the malt, let it do its thing. It's a German ale yeast, so it's a little more traditional, but still it really kind of makes that. It really makes that smoke really comes out, and there's nothing else in there to really complicate it or make it kind of murky or anything like that. That's, to me, a lot of things when brewing, I like to showcase certain ingredients where I don't like to throw a lot of stuff to kind of complicate the malt bill or the hop schedule. You know, you really let things do their work. You know, if you're making an IPA, yeah, the maltiness is necessary to kind of balance out the that kind of bitter hop character, but still, I don't want to complicate my malt bill. I want to make it really simple and let the hops do their job because that's what the style calls for. So it's all about, I am a big proponent of kind of brewing to style. I like doing it, not to say that I don't, you know, kind of experiment here and there, but still, I like to, beers that I really like to drink, I like to be able to emulate and say, hey, this is a great example of that style.
Wow. So when you went to Siebel Institute, you know what, let's take a short break. We've been stretching this segment. It's been a really good conversation. Let's take a short break. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio.
Excellent. We're in trouble. We have one more thing. Get down, get down. 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 Get down, get down.
Hey, with just one more thing, we're here on Beer Sessions Radio. Good night, and thanks, everybody. We'll give some shout-outs. Good Brew Seal Bar Events, February 2nd. Flying Dog takes over Beer Craft in Brooklyn. And Cigar City will be at the Blind Tiger February 1st at 3 p.m. And check out Jimmy's Number 43 for Valentine's Day Prefix. We're off. We're going to go over to Brooklyn Brewery now. This is a Farm Plus Beer Expo. Jason from 49th State Brewing, Andrew from Valley Malt will be over there. There's Kelso, Empire, Tundra. Brooklyn Brewery has a new beer called Mary's Maple Porter. It's going to be a really great night, and hopefully a preview of things to come with breweries making local ingredient beers. I'd like to thank our sponsors at greatbrewers.com who have helped to bring this podcast to you tonight, and also our friends at the Good Brew Seal, goodbrewseal.com. Thanks to Tony Forder, Sam, Andrea, and Jason for joining me here on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producers, Jack Inslee and Brie O'Connor, and guest coordinator Brett Thompson. We'll see you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. Happy birthday, Jack Inslee!
In some of my songs, I have casually mentioned...